to A Nightmare on Fear Street.
We're Trent and Sheree, and we're chatting about the fiercest genre.
Expect hot takes, cold drinks, and a couple of fights.
Check out the link in the episode description to connect with us via the usual socials, Patreon, and our YouTube channel. All right, everyone, here we are. We are back again. And today we are covering the iconic, the classic Michelle Pfeiffer in What Lies Beneath.
Because it's time to shut down our month of 2000 and aught, and what better way to do it than that bitch in this movie, where if there was an award for gaslighting husbands, I think Harrison Ford would try to snatch the crown. And I love that for both of them. Yes. Yes. More icons doing nonsense. Yes.
Yes. Agreed. My first note, I love Michelle Pfeiffer. I adore. This is so good. Honestly, she, to me, and I don't, no shade to Harrison Ford. He's hot. Like, okay. But Michelle Pfeiffer is the girl of this movie. Like, she is the reason for the season of this movie. 100%.
I love them both. I do. They're in my childhood because, like, they were in everything separately. And so to see them unite for this, I was like, excuse you. I wish that they hadn't made him so obviously the villain, because up top, immediately, you're like, he did something. And then you find out a girl went missing, like, oh, he killed her. He had an affair. And even the fucking shit they're doing in the lab, and they explain it when she's walking in, I'm like, oh, he's going to use that on you. And so we sit around for over 2 hours waiting for her to figure out what her husband did when we already knew.
Immediately, this man had so many fucking red flags. One, making it all about himself when she comes to him upset about seeing a fucking ghost. Like, even if you don't believe it, at least be concerned about your wife's mental health. And then also, his jealousy of her and her daughter tracks, because how many fathers are jealous of their wife's relationship with their daughter? Like, gross, but facts. His stepdaughter, her daughter.
Yeah.
And it's so obvious.
I will say that him and that actor, who the daughter only has two scenes, and nobody really knows who she is. but they gave up a ship off top. I knew that that was not her real dad. I knew that they were a family of convenience. And the way they both reacted around each other, and I was like, okay. And I love that, because you get that without the exposition, even though they gave it to us later on for people who don't pay attention. Everybody was very defined, because again, these are actors. Because I've not seen this movie since I was a child. I did not know Miranda Otto was here, and I had seen her before as a baby. Because as an adult, I'm like, that's Miranda Otto, bitches. But as a kid, I was being fed Miss Otto, and I didn't know. And so I was like fangirling out late in life, rewatching this last night.
Yes. This movie meanders too much. Like, this movie is the queen of meandering. Like, it just spends too much time just kind of lazing around, and we're gonna watch her do this, and we're gonna watch her do that. I mean, even in the like climax of the film, they're fighting in the water, and Michelle Pfeiffer's trying to live, but it's like, I'm fighting in the water, and the ghost is coming to get you. It's just all too fucking slow.
Which is wild, because it has big Robert Zemeckis energy. Like, we've seen Death Becomes Her. We've seen Back to the Futures. And so when he gets to do something exciting, it's exciting, it's fast. But like the in-between things, it's just like, yeah, it's taking its time. But like, I don't know. Maybe he had his like second director do a little bit more, or maybe he was like, this is a sophisticated movie, so we gotta like give the bitches something slower once in a while. Because like we've seen what he can do. I think this is the longest movie I've ever seen from him, actually, now that we're talking about it, because Death Becomes Her was not 2 hours. Back to the Futures could not have been 2 hours. I won't believe that, even if they are. You could show me the runtime right now, and I'll say, no, this is a new edit. Fuck off.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, it just, there's too much time spent on each little thing when it's too obvious to do that. Just move it on along. This is a heightened Lifetime film. Yes. Give me the Lifetime runtime.
Listen, people equate length with being better and being highbrow, and it's not, because we got so much from these people up top that we could have just go ahead and kept it trucking. And especially because so much of it was, he's the villain, but she doesn't know. When they were explaining the drug to her, I was like, are you serious? So we know what he's going to use on her towards the end. But every time she believes him, I knew he set himself up. I knew he put that fucking shit in the bathtub and was like, oh no, I'm a helpless victim. everything he did, I was like, I called that. And it's not because Harrison Ford's a bad actor. He was given an obvious villain, and that's all he got to work with. And so he's doing what he can with what he's been given. And I'm just like, I hate it, because I'm just like, girl, why aren't you smarter? I know you see what I'm seeing.
Yeah. And I think a theme that kind of runs through this that I wish they would have gone further with, that I think would have been really fun, is the idea of the murdered woman possessing the body of the wife of the man who fucked her over to get revenge. Like, that's a cool fucking concept. When that was happening, I was like, I am here for this part of this movie. When Michelle Pfeiffer is like taken over by the spirit of the girl and she's like jumping up on top of him with that lock of hair, I was like, this is what I want to see. This would be an interesting movie. It just didn't last very long.
That's because that's the moment that gave Michelle Pfeiffer something to do other than be victimized. I love her as an actor, and she did what she could with this script, but it was really boring watching her sort of be a victim repeatedly and like gaslight herself. Like, even at the end, when he's choking her in the water, she's not fighting back anymore. She's just like, please don't. And then the ghost shows up, and I'm like, girl. And like, when he's on the floor pretending he's knocked out and she doesn't get the phone from him because she's afraid, she drives off. She keeps doing, I know fight or flight is a real thing, but I think at some point in this evening, she would have chosen to fight. She would have chosen to break his hand when she came down the stairs and take the phone instead of being like, oh no, I can't. I'm too delicate.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, right? You have to. Like, I also think this movie could have been more clever in the writing. Like you were saying, it's all very surface. It is all very, this is what this is. I know you know what this is, but this is what this is. And I think if it had been given a little more delicacy to redirects or some, you don't even have to. I'm not opposed to like knowing that Harrison Ford's character is a fucked up person from the beginning. But like the twists and the turn, like there needs to be something there to keep me kind of engaged. There were so many times in this movie that I kind of checked out, and it has nothing to do with the performances, because Michelle Pfeiffer, like I said earlier, is the reason for the season. Like, she is giving everything she can. The script is just not there.
This movie's fun. I appreciate it now. As a kid, I hated it because it's too long. Like, it's so long it loses its rhythm, which is one of my biggest notes about it. Because, like, had it been a tight 90, I'd let it even have 100. We could have been fine. But, like, she definitely is like, I see 2 hours and I'm going 210. And that's what fucks her up, because there is some cool shit. There is so much cool movement. There's some cool ideas happening. And that's why I'm never mad when I see it. But again, I don't reach for it, even though I think she's the best of the predictable marriage drama thrillers. But I just think that she could have punched a little bit harder. She could have done a couple of things a little bit flashier and given these actors more to work with, because we're kind of coasting on them and their performances, because mm-hmm. It doesn't razzle dazzle us. It's not like, you know where this is going, but let's have fun. It's like, you know where this is going. Good day. And so...
Or at least give her a reason to not fight back. Like, why is she not fighting back? Like, give me a reason that if she's not going to, which I get, maybe it's an abusive relationship. Maybe it's I don't know. There's reasons you could give it. It's just like, oh, she's a woman, so therefore she just can't.
Let's talk about this marriage, because apparently she was a cello player with a kid and she was a badass cello player. And then she met him and was like, well, he wants a wife who's at home. And so that's what she became. And I think that would have been a cool thread to explore with these 2 hours and 10 minutes, because why did she give up her life? What was she running from? She seems unhappy. So like, let's unpack that. And we don't, because we're just like, those are throwaway thoughts. And so we're meant to take it as she gave up everything for him. And she says that. And I'm just like, but nobody told you to do that. It's like when your friends are breaking up and they're listing all the things they've done for their man who's trash. And you're like, but why'd you do all that? If you wanted a servant, you should have gotten him a servant. And by you, I mean, should have told him where to rent a servant. Because I don't understand this. I did this, I did this, and I did this, I gave this. Why? What about you? Let's unpack that. You're in therapy right now, girl. Let's talk about it.
Yes. She needed more backbone. She needed more history. There just needed to be something more written into the script for Claire that just was not there to keep me engaged in her character. And I wanted to be, because like I said, as I've said multiple times, Michelle Pfeiffer is giving.
She only She's knows giving. How to win. I also think we got more of her with these conversations she had with her friend Jody, because Jody was an alcoholic who was there for a friend. She knew her husband was cheating and didn't say anything.
I got thoughts on that.
Listen, if I'm in the hospital and you think it's in part because I was upset because he was cheating on me, we should talk about that. Just be like, hey, why'd you do that? And I know that like she has this like weird amnesia, which is why he's gaslighting her and saying she's out of her mind. But like, you think as the friend, you'd be like, did you find out a secret that night? Is that why you drove the way you drove?
Yeah. And when she was like, you can't get mad at me. No, bitch. No, I can get mad at you because that is fucked up. You saw him with another woman and you know, you say that it felt weird to you and you didn't say anything. And that was before the accident. That was before all of that happened. So you could have prevented that from happening if you had said something, especially when you see that she is seeing things. She is seeing ghosts, quote unquote. Like, she is, you're with her for this whole thing, and yet you still are mum's the word until a very specific moment.
Literally, she's like, I saw a bitch that looked like me and she seems upset with my husband, and you're like, I don't know what it could be. I don't know what it could be.
bad friend.
But also came to have an exorcism with, not an exorcism, came to have
a seance.
She came to have a seance with her. And I would not do that for any of my friends. Don't call me. Don't write me. Don't stay up in the middle of the night. If you're having a seance, I'm not there. We have enough ghouls walking around on the planet, on this plane. I will not be reaching out to others.
When Claire pulled out the Ouija board,
white lady nonsense. And that's immediately, it's what I thought.
I am so tired of white people pulling out Ouija boards, y'all. Burn the Ouija boards. Burn them all. They don't need to be around. I don't care.
From a Kmart. She got it from a Kmart. You know that. You know it's cursed. That's worse than getting it from Satan himself. It's a Kmart. You know how much bad energy is in a Kmart? Do we even have Kmarts anymore? I'm a Google Kmart.
No, they're bankrupt. I'm pretty sure.
They need to be, because it was nothing but bad vibes in a K, which you know.
We should have known.
I was like, big carrot energy to go to. They have a website still, Kmart. Kmart.com. Oh,
never mind. They're not bankrupt.
Maybe they're an online store now? These deals won't last forever. They only ever had deals. That's why they were known for.
Blue aisle or whatever they used to say.
They were a Walmart with a red K on the front. That's all I'm saying.
All I'm saying. It's all needs to be said. It's all she wrote.
Listen, literally. Of course, there's one near me. I'm in Minnesota. What? Let me close this tab because I didn't need to know this. But yeah, she went to a Kmart for a Ouija board. And her friend was drinking. You're not supposed to be drinking when you're communing with the dead. We've seen this movie. So all things could have gone wrong. We could have had so many things pop out. A whole anthology of dead girls. And so...
Listen, Sheree, if you hear about me and I am communing with the dead, you know I'm drunk. That's the only way I'm going to do it, is if I am like, sure, let's go ahead and, where's the Ouija board at? My hands on it somehow.
And the second I hear it, I'm going to text you, you off the podcast. I don't want you bring your demons to where I'm recording. Write a statement. Like,
I'm in the group chat playing with a Ouija board.
Right, what happened? He talked to the dead, and so I thoughts up, thoughts and prayers to Arkansas. We don't talk no more. You can have demons, or you can have my friendship. You gotta choose.
Oh, I feel like all of my notes and thoughts are like negative about this movie. I don't dislike this movie. It's a decent movie. It just could be so much better. Like, it could be really great.
Right? I think that's what it is. It's because like, it's fine, but it could have been a moment. And I get that it came out in 2000, so it was probably filmed in 98, 99. And it has those sensibilities. It has those 90s sensibilities, which I think is another reason why so many of us in our generation like it. Cause it's like, that's a time capsule for me. Plus, like, we didn't often get Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford having fun in chaotic horror thrillers. We still don't have that happening often. And Harrison Ford is in his I don't give a fuck era, and he still won't. So, like, he's like, I'll do your sitcom. I'll do another Star Wars. I'm not going to do that.
But I won't do that. I do miss this. I miss this late 90s, early aughts, like that turn of the century. Is that the right time? The right phrase? Millennium? Millennium. The turn of the millennium, the 2000, when it felt like these like big Hollywood actors were just wild now and being, you had movies made like Wild Things with Kevin Bacon, where he was like naked in the shower, making out with Sidney Prescott and that other girl, like having bisexual.
He's always been a wild boy. Kevin's always been a wild boy. He's like, can I show people my peen? I'm there. We're like, okay, Mr. Bacon. He's like, is it a movie? Oh, that's even better. I'm like, Kevin.
I just want more of that energy. I want more chaos.
This chaos is big
in,
chaos.
I want more chaos in films, less in the actual like world. Can we move the chaos in politics and the chaos in the weather and chaos in the environment and just put it all in the movies? That's great. That's where I want my chaos.
Kids, they don't know. Back in the day, we had to turn on TV for chaos. We didn't have to go outside because this has big chaotic vibes, which is why she's so fun. Because, yeah, she's predictable. Yeah, people could be written better. But, like, at the end of the day, she's just so much fucking fun because she is that era. She embodies that era like nobody else's business. There are movies that are probably better from that era.
I feel like she inspired Lifetime. When did Lifetime start?
Before 2000, Trent. Like,
really?
She was in the 90s. Really? Did y'all not know to not talk to strangers online because of Lifetime in Arkansas?
That was an early odds thing. That was when I was in high school.
That was when we were kids. We were getting that. We didn't have a computer. My mother's just paranoid. If this is your first episode of this podcast, my mother should have gone to therapy. But she should still go. But here we are now.
Here we are. We can't go back.
Listen, all things considered, I survived. But like, don't talk to people online. How are we going to get online, Leona? Who going to get online? With my mind?
Okay, so 1998. So like they'd only been going for 2 years. So this is like,
are you serious? Begin,
yeah, Lifetime movies specifically.
Oh, Lifetime channel has to be older than that because I remember watching that bitch before I could finish reading.
The Lifetime Movie Network launched June 29th, 1998.
Let's see about actual Lifetime because they have a Lifetime Movie Network which is new.
Okay. But they used to have movie a channel. Was Memories of a Murder.
Yeah, no, I'm
so
telling you.
So what lies beneath?
I'm a 90s bitch. Hold, please. I'm getting to the Googles. Lifetime. Show me your way. Lifetime TV Network.
Oh, 94.
There we go. Because I was like, Lifetime Movie Network is new. I'm not new to this. Again, when we had cable, my mother loved a dramatic victim bitch. I saw all these when I was sick. And that's why when I'm sick, I crave Lifetime movies. I don't do it because I can't afford cable. I'm a millennial. But I crave these bad movies because they're the best to go to sleep to. Because you wake up in the middle of another one, but it's the same plot a lot of the time. Yeah, you know he did it. You know he ain't no good. And she got to figure that out for herself. Or if it's Halloween season, she's about to give up her life for a lumberjack. Either way.
Either way, she's doing good. Listen. Yeah, you're right. This is nostalgia. This is sick at home. I'm going to turn on and watch.
84. This bitch started in 84, Lifetime TV Network.
Oh, okay. Well, I saw 90, something else was 94.
I was about to say, because I, again, that bitch was established when I was a child. She was established. She was not new. Because I, again, when we hit cable, I'd be like, ooh, Nickelodeon. My mom be like, it's time to watch sad movies. I'm like, oh.
But yeah, you turn on and you want to watch Linda Bartonelli try to find out if her husband was murdering people or not.
And he was. Every time.
And he was.
Every time. I'm like, Linda, stop asking. Stop getting married. Like,
but it's so fun. It's the original true crime documentary. Like, honestly, it's the original. And it's better, honestly, because it's not real.
There was a time where our TV wandered over to Court TV, and I didn't know it wasn't Lifetime. I was like, oh, we're in court for this whole movie. Oh, it's not a movie. This is a real life. Oh, you knew your husband did that. I know you know your husband did that. Like...
But yeah, so it's so nostalgic, and that is the part of me that will love this movie until forever, even though it could be better. It could be better.
If it was shorter, I would watch it more often. But like, this is the
100%
third time I've seen it in my life. Anytime I watch it, I like it a little bit more because I've resigned myself to what it is. But it could have been better. And I think that's the frustrating bit, because sometimes we like movies, like we like people. They're messy, but we like them. And we see the potential and we're like, why can't you be what you could be if you would just do the two things?
And you know what? Foreshadow for this episode. I think that this is only my second time watching this ever. I watched it as a child and now I'm watching it now. Mm-hmm. And I think that journey that you just talked about is where later on when you hear our rankings or our ratings, that's where they are what they are. Because I just have to accept that I know the minute I see Harrison Ford that he did it. Like the minute, literally his first scene, he's like, well, I guess you don't want to fuck me. You want to go hang out with your daughter who's going to college. Well, whatever. I guess I'll take the rejection. Like, dude, my dude.
My dude. And it makes me so sad because, again, he's a real actor. He's not Bruce Willis. He could have done things, but they didn't let him. They were like, villain. And I'm like,
He's a hot villain. I don't blame her one to fuck him. When they were like, let's open this window so we can be louder than our neighbors. I was like, that's hot.
I'm not going to lie. As far as the grandpas go, yeah. I think that him and our friend Christopher Sarandon are definitely leading the grandpa parades. Christopher Sarandon, I find a little bit more appealing because he might be younger. I don't know who's younger, but I know him as a younger person from the things I watched as a kid. Whereas Harrison Ford, I was like a grandpa because I didn't do Star Wars. So he was always a little bit gray, a little bit grizzled, a little bit cranky, get off my lawn. And so I'm like, that's a grandpa. But like, he ain't an ugly grandpa.
Maybe that's my daddy issues happening.
Listen, that's what this podcast is for, Trent. What?
You're welcome. Everyone welcome to Trent's voicing of daddy issues.
Because from the Patreon tier, just for daddy dollars.
Yes.
The daddy rundown with Trent Reese. Everyone.
The one thing that I question about this movie, like that I'm still trying to wrap my head around, so maybe you can help me. The beginning of the movie, when she is hearing her neighbors, Miranda Otto, Mary Fuhrer, and Warren Fuhrer, when she's hearing them fight and like all that stuff she's seeing, like the fence scene, is that actually happening? Or is that her brain psychologically working through her own trauma of what her husband did?
Oh, no, that couple was fighting. I did not know as a child that was James Remar under that hairpiece.
Another daddy could get it.
You're on your own on that one, but I'll let you have that. Because again, we got to advertise daddy dollars coming to a Patreon near you. But like, this is my first time catching that. Because I saw his name, like, who was he? And I saw that character, I was like, but who was James Remar? And so I went to the Google, and the Google was like, he was in front of you, bitch. I'm like, what? Because I've never seen him with long hair before. So he's a different bitch with a new wig. And so they were really fighting. Because they talked about the fighting a couple times as a couple as well.
Oh, yeah, because Harrison Ford sees it too. Okay, so they are fighting. So that's not a good relationship. See, I think that's what confused me, is like that there's all this tension about like the blood on the shoe and the... So all the husbands in this movie are terrible people.
As in the real world, yes. It's very true life. But I think where you might have gotten lost is that she thought that the dead girl was her neighbor and then it wasn't the neighbor. And so she had to figure out it was this person who has the same initials as her neighbor who was fucking her husband, who we all had known from the beginning. Was fucking around and killed somebody.
Yeah.
But because she finds that later in the movie, I think some people who zoned out got lost. But I always clocked it because I'm like, your neighbor might be dead too, but that's not who's in your house as a child. That's what I was saying to her because I was the child you wanted to party. Like.
Well, also because Miranda Otto does not look like Michelle Pfeiffer. And the woman that plays the other girl, which is Amber Valletta, who is actually, she is in a ton. I remember her as like the other woman in a bunch of shit.
She's got a type, huh?
She's in that TV show Revenge, which was not very good, but I still watched it. But she's in Dead Silence. She's in Hitch. She's in...
I never saw Hitch.
She's in a bunch of shit.
Hitch was a rom-com, and I think Kevin James is in it. Because that was back when I was still watching Will Smith movies. And I fell out because they all were very PG-13 and they started chasing his Oscar like Bradley Cooper. And I'm trying to come back into the fold because I am here for some Oscar shenanigans that happened a couple years ago. We've all wanted to hit Chris Rock, and I support that. And so I will be in the theater for anything else fun Mr. Millennium wants to do. But I was not going to watch
it. She was also in Premonition. She's in it, like so much shit. It's wild. She's always the other woman. If you watch a movie, she's always typecast.
She was in The Family Man. I fell asleep in a Nicolas Cage movie.
they cast that well, because she does look like Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie.
Like, if I was not as into it, I would have been like, did they let her body double wander out? But like, I was like, no, that's a new girl. But yeah, no, I think that she did what she could do with what she was given as well. Again, these actors were giving stereotypical roles. It feels like what I always suspect goes on in those novels you see in the supermarkets when we were kids that were aimed at housewives. It feels like that. And I know that people like to pretend that women aren't smart, but I think housewives could crack a mystery a little bit better than the ones they were given at the time. But also, those were also a little bit smutty, so they were like, you know,
that's what they liked about it. They didn't care about the mystery.
They're like, I'll take a simple mystery if we got some peen in that. And this didn't give us any peen. And so I'm like, if you're not going to give us peen, make it a little bit of a mystery.
I think this movie also, and I don't know if this was a writing thing or a direction thing, probably maybe a little bit of both. It just indicated too much. Like, it indicated everything. Like, we've talked about the Harrison Ford situation and all the dialogue moments that are like, obviously this person is fucked, like not okay, he probably murdered this girl. But then when she sees the picture of the victim and it like scrolls, like literally the camera scrolls down to the missing necklace, and Michelle Pfeiffer's like and grasps her pearls, I'm like, it's too obvious that the necklace is going to come into play later on. I love a good, you know, foreshadow moment, but like, make it clever, make it interesting, make it different.
I just got my face cracked. The person who wrote the screenplay is Clark Gregg, who is an actor we've seen in so many Marvel things and other things. Like, he's a legitimate working actor. We've seen this man in so much shit forever and always. I did not know he wrote the screenplay until today, years old.
He's Phil Coulson from like all the Marvel shit.
Like, his resume is ridiculous. We've been looking at this man forever, and he's like, also, I'm a screenwriter. Ha ha, bitches. And we never knew. It's like, grandpa had a secret. Like,
yes.
I am gagged. I love when that happens. It's like when Dean Shelton from Community was like, I'm an Oscar winner and screenwriter. I'm like, excuse you.
He's only written three things. He's written What Lies Beneath, Choke, and Trust Me, which I've never seen. Choke or Trust Me.
Is Choke by the same dude, Chuck Palahniuk, who wrote Fight Club, correct? The book it is anyways. It was the same Chuck I'm thinking of.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I remember, again, I was a 90s kid. And so like Fight Club was big. So people were like, also read Choke. And I was like, I don't know. I think that Fight Club's enough for me, but I don't know. I'm looking at Mr. Zemeckis's resume, because again, I knew Death Becomes Her and Back to the Future, but he also did Forrest Gump. He also did Bordello of Blood, which I did not see coming at all.
I haven't seen that one.
That's one of the Tales from the Crypt movies that people can never find because they never stream. He also did The Polar Express, which I'm never going to watch because children movies.
I hate that movie so much.
He did the 2020 Witches. I'm never going to watch that because I'm... Anne Hathaway is an amazing person to have in the world, but I don't want her on my screen.
I adore Anne Hathaway. I think we've had this conversation before.
We've had it so many times.
He executive produced Manifest, which I actually really enjoyed. So that's interesting.
This bitch directed Flight with Denzel Washington, which I've not seen. I'm a nervous flyer. But I've heard and I've written about it a lot for Dresden Drill and those news pieces. Yeah, no, I...
He produced Castaway, 13 Ghosts, Ghost Ship.
I could see that because Gothica. Him and Tom Hanks should be meeting more often with their aesthetic.
He was a producer on the 2005 remake of House of Wax, which we just talked about.
Oh my God. Well, then.
The theme of the night.
Well.
Little did we know.
That I just, you know, sometimes.
Oh. Sometimes good things happen to people who wait.
Listen, I can't believe, because again, he's been doing things forever, like forever, ever and always. And so like these resumes get long and you're like, wait, didn't he do such and such? Didn't he do that one thing? And so some of these I probably knew at the time they came out, but I've forgotten most of them. And also he is genre agnostic, like a bitch. Because, like, obviously This and Death Becomes Her are horror movies, and so is Brunello of Blood. But the rest is kind of just, like, family-ish things, the Back to the Futures. He did the first three Back to the Futures. I thought he did the first one.
Mm-hmm. Is there more than three?
I think they're got up to four, and they're also redoing it, I believe, with Tom Hiddleston. Uh-huh. Not Tom Hiddleston. But Spider-Man. Tom Holland.
Okay.
So here's the thing. There's two Tom Hollands. One is a writer that we've done movies from, and one is Spider-Man, and there's Tom Hiddleston. And so my brain is like, don't say Tom Holland. He's a writer. But Spider-Man is right there acting his heart out. And so many things. And so my brain is like, fuck him. Like, no, he's not Hiddleston. He's the middle one. He's the other Holland. He did Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's a national treasure.
One of my friend's favorite movies.
I've not seen this since I was a child. Again. I don't know if I should revisit that one, if I should let that memory rest, but like I definitely remember that being on repeat as a child. Yes. So he's worked with all my favorites and Christopher Lloyd a lot.
Yeah.
But he produced Ghost Ship. So, like, I know Jazz is a fan of this movie, and I know Jazz was the reason I saw Ghost Ship, because I never saw all of it as a kid. And people keep pissing on it. So she was like, no, you should watch it. And so we watched it on Clubhouse before we let Clubhouse go. He's like, he produced The Frighteners. That makes so much sense because this feels like The Frighteners. And I couldn't put my finger on it. But like, he has an aesthetic.
The intro of Ghost Ship is good.
I have seen much worse movies on a boat. I'm just going to say that and leave that there. People act like Ghost Ship's the worst thing to happen to the sea. And it is not.
No, it is not.
It is top three from the sea movies. I'm just going to put that out there. I always want to say this reminds me of The Frighteners, and I could never put my finger on it because he did not direct that. Peter Jackson did. But yeah. Yeah. Because sometimes producers have a certain aesthetic and it bleeds over.
So Robert Zemeckis filmed What Lies Beneath while production for Castaway was shut down so that Tom Hanks could lose weight for his character.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So according to IMDb anyway.
Okay, that could make some things make sense. Because again, some of this felt very drawn out. But like the things that he does well, because like he is a chasing bitch. Like he really fucking is. If you give him something spicy, he's going to work with it. Which is why the fun bits in Death Becomes Her are fucking fun. It's why we're running with Marty and all those Back to the Futures. It's why Who Framed Roger Rabbit moved so fluidly, or at least I remember it moving fluidly as a child. Well,
and there's so many shots in this movie that are really interesting. Like, I remember the shot where first gets into her car, but realizes that the key she has is for the truck. So she opens the door, and you're watching this through the side mirror, and she closes it, and then you see him get up in the back. Like, so there's so many interesting shots in this movie. It's well shot. Like, it's really well shot. It's just the pacing and the script.
Yeah, because, like, the things that we like lean forward for are the things that we should be focused on and should be closer together. And they're not, unfortunately. Because, and even in the things that we don't need, like when she goes to investigate that small town where he used to take his affair, and she sees that he gets his locket from a place called the Sleeping Dog. And I'm just like, hit that on the nose. There's so many cool things, but it's just, we don't need it to breathe so long and so often. I want a tighter cut. I don't know if there's like a TV cut out there somewhere that keep the bad words in for me. But I would like to see that and see if it trucks along a little bit better.
Yeah. Apparently also Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford were Zemeckis' first and only choices for the lead roles. I 100% agree with that. No one else could. No one else could. Yeah. But like these two are phenomenal in these roles.
They are. But I'm always going to advocate for brown people. And so I wonder what this would be like with like Selma Hayek and Antonio Banderas. or Halle Berry and Denzel. Why not? They should do something together.
Let's just do a franchise.
I would let Denzel Washington gaslight me tonight. So this makes this more believable. Look, talking about grandpas, so we got it. Oh.
He does got it. Any of those three, the two you just named, come on over.
Listen, but again, we have this idea in our heads when it's idealistic small town or like cottage house, and it's got to be white people. And so we shut down some things that could happen. Because I think Selma Hayek would have fun in this bitch. She would have had so much fucking fun.
That's fair.
Yeah. I want to redo it. If you redo it today, who would you choose?
Oh, that's hard. There's, like I said, Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford are great. They're not the only ones that could do this. Like, I mean,
like with the people acting today in these age brackets of like between 40 and 60. Because like a lot of the actors who would have probably been considered are now canceled back in the day. So like if we're looking around the people today who are over the age of 40 and could get any shenanigans.
I'm so bad with people. Do you have one? I can't.
I was gonna let you go first, but damn. put me back on the spot. Wow. This is hard because we don't let people over the age of 25 do anything. Unless it's Harrison Ford.
Right.
I would like to see Viola Davis as Claire because we saw what she did with How Good Way Murder. And I think that would be fun. Or Kerry Washington. Actually, Kerry Washington. Yes, Kerry Washington.
I can see her
with the nose right now being like, I'm not your wife. And I would let her have fits, Tony Goldwyn, because I went down a rabbit hole on Twitter, y'all. Somebody was like, they used to have an affair while they're filming Scam. I'm like, what? They are really in love with each other. I know they have marriages, but like a lot of the handholding and the way he gets all misty and compliments her and tells her she's beautiful whenever he sees her. I'm just like, if you're not fucking, I would like him to treat me that way too. If you are fucking, I still would.
I'm down with that. And then can we cast Reese Witherspoon as her friend, the drunk friend that's terrible to her?
Yes. 100% yes. What? Jody, the alcoholic.
I love this game. And then who are we going to cast as the couple across the street? I say Brad Pitt as the husband. And because he's like the, you know.
He's Brad playing Pitt. Himself.
Right. And then,
he told us.
And then, who do I want as the woman? I'm going to say Kate Winslet. That'd be fun.
Because I need to be a little bit younger, I would probably go with Samara Weaving.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah.
Actually, no. Fuck that. Because I'm gonna do more brown people. Because like I don't know where I left off in my main cast. I'm gonna do Melissa Barrera. I'm gonna do her. And let her and Macy Gooden have fun. Because like, core forever, baby.
Yes, Melissa Barrera. I love that. I'm so bad with thinking of people. Ooh, you know who else would do good in this role? Penelope Cruz.
You do like her.
I love her. And she's gorgeous.
I would still see Selma Hayek for this because she's, let me see how old she is. She was just in Black Mirror. And so she's still doing things and she still looks like Selma Hayek. And so like, but let me see if she's about 40-ish. Well, I mean, she's not.
It could be older. We could skew older.
She looks like she's 30, so it doesn't matter. But I'm just nosy now. She's 57. This bitch is 57 and so younger than I'm ever gonna look still. Like she up in a bodysuit on fucking Black Mirror and I was like, excuse you, Miss Hayek.
I love Selma Hayek too. I love all of this. I love it all. Yeah. Can we not make multiple remakes?
What lies beneath again? What lies underneath?
What lay beneath? What lay above the beneath?
Beneath what may lay.
I mean, that's essentially every like Lifetime movie ever made.
Listen. Oh. Kiki Palmer as Claire.
I'm down for that.
Yes.
But Kiki Palmer could also be the neighbor.
Kiki Julie.
Or the, she could do anything. She could also be the, because she looks, she still looks like she's 20, let's be real. She could, she could be the one that he slept with and killed. Like, she could put her anywhere.
We have to make it younger, because Kiki's definitely like 25-ish. No, Kiki's 30 now, my bad. Again, somebody who's way too fucking young. But she's 30 now. So we had to make it younger than we have. But also, he's a professor who has a trophy wife, so I'm fine with her being a little bit younger.
Let's just go, let's just cast them as themselves. Jessica Biel and Justin Timberlake.
Oh, he needs a job. Cry me a river, mister.
Play yourselves. Play yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see he's... I heard this. I read this online. I didn't read the article, though, so it may not be real. But he's suing Britney because of her book for defamation. That's fucking bullshit.
He's a little bitch. So I can see him doing that, but he should be advised to not do that because the book is out and about. So people who were on the fence about him being an asshole for some reason, now know. I think that much like Elvis Presley before him, there's going to be a lot of true crime things that are not specifically true crime after his demise. Because I just listened to Priscilla. I listened to Priscilla's book, Elvis and Me. If she said all that while she loved him, the receipts from his haters are going to be great. And I hope they come out soon because I'm willing to open my wallet right now tonight. I don't have any money in it, but I'm going to put it on Klarna. Put on Afterpay. Give me all the receipts on that asshole. And so I'm looking forward to Justin Timberlake getting the same treatment in the afterlife.
Yes. 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 so, I mean, yeah, this movie could be cast a billion different ways and a more diverse way, and it would be great. I think it's sadly, it's because this is a very universal theme. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Men being trash and women dealing with the bullshit.
Sounds very familiar. Oh, what if the couple is Lupita and Daniel Kaluuya?
Okay, go with me here. She's a little older than I think maybe we're looking for eventually at first, but Octavia Spencer.
She deserves a role that's not ma or a maid.
Yes, and she needs a lead because she's usually like if she's in the movie, she's in every movie ever made, I'm pretty sure.
She is.
But she's always like the sidekick. Octavia Spencer, because you get body diversity, you get, yes.
She's about the same age as Viola, so Viola could be her friend for once.
Boom.
Yeah, let Viola have fun with Jody in a wine bottle.
Being the asshole.
Girl, I saw your husband. I won't say nothing because you had problems. Oscars for everybody.
Tears.
Oscars for everybody.
And then she does the gif of her like getting up with her bag.
That gif is my life. Yes. It's my mood. It's my energy.
I love that gif. It's so good.
I use it like 90 times a week. What?
It's universal.
It is. For every situation, there's Viola Davis gift with a bag. Look. But yeah, I could see Octavia doing that and being like, dead girl, what?
Yes.
I'm here for it. Yes. I'm here for all these casting choices we just did. I'm happy they recorded because I didn't write them down. But they need to be put somewhere and it's in the universe. Ooh.
There's also, I can't think of her name because I've been drinking.
What was she in?
Gabrielle Union.
Yes. She loves a thriller, so yeah.
I even like I know it's not great. I know it's not great, okay? I'm putting that out there. I know it technically is not a great film. But I liked that movie where she was her and the other woman and they were like fighting and shit. I don't remember what it was called, but let me see if I can find it.
Is it a Tyler Perry movie? Because if so, we're going to just go ahead and delete this part.
Oh, it might have been. I don't know.
Delete this part. He's done so much to black women. I just can't support him anymore.
No, I don't.
Those wigs. But
is
no.
Breaking In. Is it a Tyler Perry movie? I don't know.
It's not. But like, I think her and Vivica A. Fox would be fun as the friends, Jodie and Claire. And they both love a thriller.
They do. They do.
Yes. Or what if this is the role Beyonce's been waiting for to return to acting.
Was it Gabrielle Union and Beyonce in a movie where they were fighting?
I'm sure they were. That might have been Tyler Perry movie.
That might have been a Tyler Perry movie. Now we're just assuming every movie is a Tyler Perry movie.
If it's a bad movie where black women were mistreated, it's a Tyler Perry movie. Even if it's not. If you know, you know.
I can't find that one that I'm thinking of right now that's her. I think it's Beyonce.
But what if her husband was Sterling K. Brown?
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I do love that. It does track with you and I that we're focusing on casting Claire. But
listen, because she's the moment. And I think that I feel like at this point in time, women were not able to be like, can I have a little more agency in my character? And whereas today, sometimes there's a whisper and somebody's like, oh, we got to like let her have a little bit more backbone, a little bit more fight. And so I definitely see these ladies bringing it, and you can't write them the same helpless way, because that's not believable.
I think our remake needs to be written by a woman and directed by another woman of different perspectives.
Issa Lopez is out there. She's saving True Detective right now.
Issa Lopez is out there, and Ava DuVernay is out there, and lots of, yes. Akilah Cooper.
She's like, a great writer. Listen. She's a great writer. Let her have it.
Let's go down the list.
Let her have it. Depending on how opulent you want to be, maybe Emma Fennell could like direct that bitch. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe Emerald Fennell is producing so she can like have some say, but like she's not like the one doing it all. I would like that. Let's just get an all female team.
More women, please.
Yeah. Because I think that is.
What's missing?
I think that's what's killing the script, is that it's directed and written by men. Now, I will say Sarah Kerchonen.
She's the person who co-tacking the story, but then
Yes. So there is a woman involved somewhere, but like the men took it over, and it shouldn't have. That should not have happened.
That's the missing piece. There's too many dicks on the dance floor to borrow from Flight of the Conchords, and so
and Saltburn.
Listen. I was reading about Jacob Elordi's dick today, at the time of recording this, because people are discovering the Mortuary Collection, and that's how we all met him, in the Mortuary Collection, where he gave birth and exploded. And now he's in Saltburn, and his dick is not the conversation.
Elordi. I ain't gonna turn either of them dicks down. Elordi.
There's not enough dicks on that dance floor, because I saw that cast. Saltburn. Reveal yourself. Back to this movie while we're getting sued.
Back to this movie and dicks.
Right? What was your last episode? We're talking about everybody's dick in Hollywood. Yeah, that's the one. We got lawsuits. Yeah. Woo. I just have to say, this movie feels so old Hollywood, like those like Hitchcockian 50s, 60s mm-hmm. era thrillers. That weird bridge scene specifically where the scenery's passing her and the truck not moving. Look.
So IMDb has a thing about that. And I'm glad it's interesting that you bring that up. So Zemeckis consciously shot the movie in the style of Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. If Hitchcock had access to digital technology, the heroine is a blonde, a common trademark of Hitchcock films. I agree with you. I think this is very Hitchcockian, the way that like the camera moves, like the scene that I mentioned earlier with the side mirror, like mm-hmm. that's very Hitchcock. I 100% agree with you.
Like there is so much cool shit as far as like technical aspects of it goes. I think it's another reason why we all lean forward, because again, mm-hmm. it's not, I can't argue with you and be like, this is a great fucking movie, but it's fun. And I'm happy I got a chance to see it for the third time.
Well, and like even opening in the chat in the bathtub scene where she like pops up and it's like jarring, mm-hmm. like that's a moment. Like that is a moment.
Right. And so that's exciting. So maybe this was him in his Hitchcock era, and that's why it doesn't, because again, the parts that he gets to be Robert Zemeckis or feel like Robert Zemeckis, but the other parts are like, what are we doing? And we love when a director experiments. Like we just saw Nope, and that's definitely Jordan Peele in his Spielberg era.
Yes. And I'm ready for the next era. I didn't like Nope, but it's not my favorite.
It's a lot to unpack. All three of his movies are bops for me. Oh,
there's not a bad time.
No.
Let's be real.
They're all unpacking different things. And some people are like, I get that one easier. I get that one not as easy. But every time I revisit Nope, I'm just like, I see more things and I see more things. And I see more conversations.
I'm excited for his next one because he says this is going to be like the most him movie, and I'm excited for it.
I don't know what that means, but I'm ready because I've seen Key and Peele. I've seen some of his comedy movies, and I've seen all three of his like horror movies. I'm ready. Whatever version of him he wants to bring to the table, I'm buckled. I'm set. That's my wallet.
Let's get into hot takes for What Lies Beneath. Sheree, what is your hot take?
My hot take is this is a fun ghost story, and I miss these swings that upset critics but had us all talking. Because, of course, the critics hated it. But, like, the viewers, we still like it. We're still fond of it, even though we can see and talk about what's wrong with it. And I just miss that. We don't take big swings anymore. We're all like, let's do this property to death. Let's do this property one more time. Let's adapt this. We don't go, hey, you know what's bad shit? A woman in a bathtub. Work from there.
I see that. So my hot take is more of like a question that I'm posing for the world. I wonder if one of my hesitations, like we've mentioned multiple times, is that this movie is so predictable. Like it is so obvious. And I wonder if part of that is because like we talked about the nostalgia. We grew up on Lifetime with like every single movie was this. I wonder if this was made in a world without that Lifetime, that wasn't like a thing that happened, but it happens in life. So I get it. I get that it's realistic. That's not what I'm saying. But like, I just wonder if we hadn't been predisposed to like 1,000 different stories, especially from a 2024 standpoint, that ended in this way, if it would have been less predictable. But I also just think it was written to be predictable. So that's my question to pose for the world and you, Sheree, is if you could take away the decade, well, the years of movies that you've watched that ended with the husband did it, would this movie still be as predictable as what it is?
100%. Just because, again, the way it's written and the way the performance is given, there's no room to be like, it could be anything else. But also, now that we know who wrote it and he's only had 3 movies produced, because, again, you can write all you want, but until you see your things in the way they're supposed to be seen, you can't really take notes and learn from it. So he could have been writing for decades on decades on decades. He could be a seasoned fucking filmmaker. But if he's only gotten 3 of them through the finish line, that's only 3 chances to see what he could be doing differently. Advocating for men. But like, I know that me, because I'm trying to get my fucking toes in the door of TV and film. I never get to see it in that medium. And so I don't know if it does land or not. Because my friends and I are laughing, yeah. But like when it's all coming together and I'm seeing a director interpret it in that medium, will it work? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a really fair point. Everyone out there listening to my question, let us know. Send us a message. Let us know if you agree with Sheree or if you don't. You never know.
Throw me under the bus.
I just didn't put my opinion out there, so I can't say myself.
No, like, if you got thoughts about it, hit up the Instagram, because Trent mostly runs that one. Don't find me on Twitter, because I'm going to be like, go home, Trent. People need to know that, because they'll be like, LOL, you like this movie? Like, I don't. You want to talk to Trent. I don't know that movie. That girl. Get out of here. I am the Twitter bitch.
And I am the Instagram bitch. Yes. But yeah, like I'm just curious for those of us. And especially if this is your first watch in 2024, if you could, I know it's theoretical, but like, let's pull that out. Cause it is kind of an overdone trope because it's real, but like it is kind of predictable. Would you or would you not? I kind of agree. So I'm going to put my opinion out there. I do tend to agree with you, Sheree. I do think it would still be. But I'm curious. Like, it's an interesting thought experiment, right?
I think it would have been cool to be like, people know the husband did it. The husband always did it. All true crime, all news cases. So how do we play with that? How do we make it fun? How do we make it a cat and mouse game? Like, what's keeping her in the house? Because she knows he did it, too. And what does he have over her where she can't leave? So she has to get rid of him before she can get free and reveal his secret. I think that would have been more interesting.
I think that's what I mean when I want it to be more clever. As I want those layers. I want more of that detail in that of like, why is she here? What is the cat and mouse? Like, you know, the ins and outs.
We need to fold something in to borrow from Schitt's Creek. We needed to fold something into the cheese and we didn't. And so we just have cheese and we're like, we're going to make an omelet, but we didn't put the eggs in. We didn't put any spices. We put no veggies, no meats. Yeah. And we love cheese, but like you can dress it up.
Y'all know. Y'all know I'm the queen of cheese. So the queen of cheesa. So
I'm talking about edible cheese. You're talking about movie cheese, and that's two different cheeses. I don't like that.
I'm talking about all cheese, edible, movie, not blue. I don't do that.
That's mold. It's wrong. Stop eating blue cheese. You're eating mold. That's my real hot take.
All right, Sheree. How many drinks you giving this one?
I'm giving her 3.5 espresso martinis because I feel like educated, sophisticated lady.
Okay, okay. See, okay, this is my foreshadow because from earlier, because I'm giving this movie 3 pickle teenies.
Oh.
That gut reaction. I love pickles. So a pickle teeny is everything.
Have you had a pickle back?
I've never wanted. What?
Have you had a pickleback? Are you one of those?
I've never. What is that?
Okay. So in Texas, my friend Meg, who we met in Texas, because we all were suffering together, she came from the South and she introduced picklebacks. It's a shot of whiskey or bourbon followed by a shot of pickle juice. And the smells together are too much for me because I love bourbon. So I'd be like, I love bourbon. And then she handed me that. I'm like, no, I'm going to just let the bourbon marinate.
I am not. But I'm going to try that tomorrow night when I'm at the bar.
Let me know if you love. But don't send me pictures, though, because I don't want to see it. But let me know.
for karaoke. Oh. So, but no, I'm going to give it 3 pickle teenies because it's a little bitter, but it's delicious and it's nostalgic. So, and it's a martini. So it's like mostly vodka or gin, however you take your
martinis. Did we both pick martinis tonight?
We did. And we're very close. And my foreshadow is you've watched this a little few more times than I have. So, like, I think if I had watched this a couple more times, maybe I would be closer to 3.5, maybe even a 4, probably not, but you know, maybe.
I think 3.5 is where we're going to tap out because again, that's a B plus or a B. Yeah. I can do math. Yeah, that's a B. B minus, I don't know. I used to teach y'all. No, I've been drinking. Don't judge me. But yeah, no, I think that she's not A. She's not an A. But like, she's a nice B somewhere. I'm going to let the student pass.
She's a high C, low B. Yeah. 78 to 95. Or not 95. 70.
See, this I'm not. We got to stop talking about numbers on this podcast. I'm tired of us burning ourselves. We do this every fucking year.
75, and it's like, we can't 78 count. To 85. That's what I meant to say.
Listen, I'm tired of people knowing we can't do math. I'm tired.
All right.
But yeah, we both agreed on martinis. We both gave 3 something. What is this? What is
it's
this?
It's a win-win-win. Win-win across the board.
We mostly agreed on the notes.
Boom.
People are going to be so confused. They're going to be like, is this the same street? Did I listen to a different podcast?
It's the kumbaya moment.
Listen, where are my fights on fears?
Right. Don't wait till next week. I'm sure it'll happen.
I'm sure Julie James will pop up next week. Like Jaws.
All right, y'all. Well, that is our thoughts on What Lies Beneath. Thank you all so much for listening. Next week, we're going to be covering Ty West's The House of the Devil, which, like I said, I've never seen. Well, I think I did watch it, but I don't remember it because I was drunk. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to rewatch it. But Ty West is very, you know, you love him or you hate him.
I will say that is one of his better movies for me. I've only seen it once, but I like it more than some of the movies people act like are changing cinema. I like it more than some of those. But also, I'm excited for that because whenever I hear Ty West, I think of our friends who called him T.I. West for a minute because they hadn't heard his name. But they knew that there was a rapper named T.I. and they just like, T.I. West. And I was like, it's Ty. And I know some of them are listening. And so I was going to be like, I thought of you today. And I'm thinking you next week.
T.I. West.
That's a fun name. I think you should have trademarked it. I think you should listen to them and their podcast. And it should have been like, I am T.I. Wiz. I know T.I. has bad connotations right now, so I'm just take that real quick.
Yeah, he sure does.
He popped up in a movie I saw because he's a sometimes actor now, and he's bad at it. And the movie was bad. And I was like, you deserve this movie. You deserve this movie. I wish I hadn't hit play on this bullshit. And I didn't know you were going to be here. Oh, yeah. I was so busy being salty about T.I. West. I mean, I was talking about T.I. I forgot my own job. Wow. Next week on Spruce Street, which is a podcast I've done before, We are changing our wigs for a new theme. Category is religious trauma for your mama. You know which host advocated for that one. Some of these themes, it's just like you already knew. You already know.
My bread and butter, y'all. My bread and butter. Y'all get ready.
Listen, I always think of, I don't even know what episode it was anymore, but you're like, I needed more nuns. And I was like, Trent.
And that's when Jamie was like, Trent, you want to be on my podcast talking about religious trauma? And I said, yes.
Listen, again, we haven't covered that movie.
It's a lot.
I don't want it.
I need some space. I'll do it again, but I need some space.
I don't want it. You saved that for your mama.
All right, y'all. Again, thank you so much for listening and supporting us here on Fear Street. As always, make sure that you stay fierce out there.
Bye.